As demand for renewable energy technologies rises, the sourcing of the minerals required in these technologies, like cobalt, lithium, copper, and nickel, is skyrocketing. Many of those minerals are located in or near vulnerable communities and in conflict-affected or fragile countries. And while there has been some progress, extracting and processing the minerals is still a dirty business. So recognizing the centrality of these minerals to our global energy transition, what do governments, the private sector, civil society, NGOs, and other stakeholders need to do differently so that we can ensure a greener future that benefits everyone? You're listening to the New Security Broadcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. I'm Lauren Reese, and in this episode, I get to welcome Roger Mark D'Souza back to the Wilson Center for a conversation about these critical minerals. A former director of the Wilson Center's Global Sustainability and Resilience Program, Roger Mark is now the Vice President for Sustainable Markets at PACT. In our conversation, we discuss PACT's experiences and lessons learned working with communities, governments, and the private sector to ensure safe and sustainable artisanal and small-scale mining. Roger Mark, it's really great to have you back in your old office here at the Wilson Center. Welcome back. It's good to see you. Could you start by telling us a little bit about PACT and your position there and what you're up to today?
Thank you very much, Lauren. It's great to be back. So I'm now at an organization called PACT. We're an international development organization. We operate in about 40 countries. We're 50 years old, and there are a number of areas that we focus on, which include health, governance, sustainable markets, and capacity building and innovation around community engagement. PACT is most well known for our work on communities and how we engage with communities, which is very much a co-creation process in partnership and led with communities. So I am the Vice President of Sustainable Markets, and in that role, I oversee our programs on energy and the environment, livelihoods, and artisanal and small-scale mining.
Oh, that's great. And we were so pleased to have your colleague Amayel Dia at the October 4th event on critical minerals, and she did a really fantastic job representing PACT's important work in this space. And I'm glad that we have a chance to talk today a little bit more about that. Can you tell me a little bit about where you're working on the artisanal and small-scale mining and what that looks like for PACT?
Yeah, it's really good. Amayel is great.
She's wonderful.
She is our senior social protection officer. A lot of her work is in the Great Lakes region. And it covers some of the critical minerals work that we do in that region around cobalt and copper, of course, with Democratic Republic of Congo. We also work on the three T's, so tin, tantalum, and tungsten. And we do that work in the Great Lakes region, of course, DRC, Burundi, Rwanda, and also Uganda. And in that work, we work in partnership with the International Tin Association. We administer a program called ITSCI, which is looking at the supply chain in the three T's with a focus on social protections, traceability, and due diligence. And in fact, globally, this is the only program that adheres 100% to the OECD guidelines for due diligence. So quite important. We also do work on gold and artisanal gold small-scale mining. We do some of that work in Ghana, for example, looking at the use of mercury in the gold mining sector. We also do work on mica. And mica is contained in cosmetics and used in small electronics. Some of that work in countries like Madagascar. And we also do work on gems and colored gemstones in countries like Tanzania and Kenya.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, so a broad, wide scale and broad geographies that you're covering and on minerals that I didn't even realize I was using on a daily basis.
I know.
That's great. Could you, for people who may not be as familiar with the mining sector, talk a little bit about what differentiates artisanal and small-scale mining from larger industrial mining?
Yeah, it's so funny because there's so many perceptions about artisanal and small scale mining. So the larger scale established mining is more mechanized and it's more formalized, it's larger in scale and well established. Artisanal and small scale mining is really the hidden labor force of the mining sector, accounting for 90%, 90% of workers in the mining sector. It takes place in 80 countries worldwide and employs 45 million miners. So it's messy, it's dirty, it's not formalized, and there are low barriers to entry. So it engages communities. It's a tremendous source of livelihoods and income for communities, and really is critical to supply chains and critical minerals. So a lot of that is taking place in countries in the Great Lake region in Africa, and other countries like Colombia is also quite significant.
But with that, so there's a little bit of a tension in the fact that the mining is sort of the foundation of the community's livelihoods.
Yes.
Right? Like they need the mining in order to live day to day. But it's also introduced a lot of child labor and unsafe practices and degraded the environment, which is also key to sort of the livelihood sustainability in communities. So, how are you working on those issues then? Can you give us some examples of what this looks like on the ground?
Yeah, I think those, I'm glad that you asked that question, because these are really critical dimensions. We have a number of programs supported by the Department of Labor and a number of private sector partners that are helping to get children out of mines. So we have an alternative livelihoods program whereby we train parents in responsible parenting and looking at opportunities, economic opportunities and schooling opportunities for children. We also look at ways that we can put these young individuals as they come of school leaving age on a path to sustainable livelihoods. So this is an important component of the just transition,
right.
And ensuring that these individuals get onto a pathway that they can have for the rest of their lives. So we work very closely with the private sector and the communities to determine what that would look like. I was recently chatting with a young girl who had come out of the mining sector on a recent visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo. And she said to me, "You have to understand, Roger Mark, that I am now on a path to economic empowerment that is long term. My parents understand this. I can serve as a voice in my community, and I'm helping to get other children out of mining." In some of the mining sites where we work, and we work with more than 2,000 mining sites in the countries where we work. In some mining sites where we focus on getting children out of the mines, we're able to get more than 90% of the children out of these mines. So this is critical to addressing modern slavery and child labor. It's a huge issue and a human rights violation. And I know Amael spoke about this, because this is at the core of her work. So that is a strong component of our work on artisanal and small-scale mining. We also look at the connections between health and mining. So specifically, we have programs that look at reducing the use of mercury in gold extraction that has very long, sustained health impacts on the miners. And that's a very important dimension. And then overall, we look at how we can formalize the artisanal and small-scale mining sector. We work with associations and cooperatives. We do a lot of capacity building work with these associations so that there's better representation and better governance within local governance structures and with mine owners. So in one of the mines that I recently visited in Rwanda, I was amazed, because many of the people that I speak speak with are very surprised to discover that there's so many women miners. And in this one site that I visited in Rwanda, the miner, the owner of the miner, said to me that he showed me a room where women can go when they're menstruating. And this is very unusual because there are a lot of taboos associated with women in the mining sector. So to see this progression and understanding, and at the same time, he is employing, he has two major technical staff who are engineers, and one of them is a woman who was trained locally. So to see that the leadership and the care and attention at the level of the miners, that's part of the formalization, recognition mm-hmm. that is needed, but also the gender dimensions of artisanal and small-scale mining.
Yeah, that's huge. Well, and, you know, so we, you've mentioned a couple times that you've been partnering with the private sector in some of these initiatives. And we've been engaging here at the Wilson Center with the Critical Minerals Supply Chain Group of mining industry representatives, as well as some of the events that we've hosted recently. We had Ford on the last event with Amiel, and there seems to be a real sincere and avid interest in doing better, right? And figuring out how to move forward with the renewable energy transition, with our digital economy, in ways that don't repeat the mistakes that are so often associated with extractive processes. But it's not just a moral imperative, right? Like that there seems to be an understanding that this is also sort of a an economic imperative, right?
Exactly.
So can you talk a little bit about your engagement with the private sector and how you see their sort of thinking on this evolving?
Yeah, it's a really important question. I think certainly the moral imperative is there.
Sure.
When they look at issues around modern slavery, human rights abuses, there's also a cost dimension to that. When there are violations, there are impacts and cost dimensions. So they look at that, and that is part of their risk registrar from a business perspective. So they, as corporate partners, have to look at the risks that they face in their supply chain. So it's a moral imperative, but it's also good business sense. As you mentioned, as we move to this renewable energy economy, and you know, some of the studies from the World Bank even suggest we might move from a fossil fuel economy to a mining economy, right, there are more business opportunities there. Having a sense of what's going on in the supply chain through greater due diligence and transparency makes good business sense. Their boards of directors and their shareholders want to know. They're asking for this information. And we know this through the ESG standards, so environment, social, and governance standards in a corporate entity are really important. And then finally, this is an important entry point to other points of entry, as we know, through the Sustainable Development Goals.
Right.
So looking at the environmental impacts, the social impacts, the governance impacts, and being able to report on that is important. So that there's definitely a moral imperative. There is a business opportunity. There's a risk management perspective.
Yeah.
And then there's a recognition that this just makes sense,
right,
in terms of how they address various interconnected and a holistic approach to their business development.
So you've been, PACT has been doing work in this space for more than a decade.
More than a decade,
right?
Yes.
Can you share some of the lessons that you've learned, some of the sort of impacts that you've been proud of, and what you're still sort of grappling with?
Yeah. Well, we continue to grapple with a lot. It's a long road. And PACT, in doing this work for more than a decade, is an early adopter. So we are a mover and a shaker in this space, which means in a very dynamic environment, you have to continue to engage communities. So in the artisanal and small-scale work, it's so much tied to community engagement and receptivity that relationship and the tools that we bring to that work is critical. Dealing with the perceptions of the artisanal and small-scale mining sector and being able to document the contributions that that sector makes to economic opportunities, but also to improve livelihoods and improve well-being is important. So continuing to document and share those lessons is also critical. Formalization is a huge challenge. Because there are no barriers to entry in this sector, we have to continue to engage and recognize that when there's greater formalization, structures, governance of the sector, it helps improve the sector. And overall, recognizing that this is only going to continue to increase. You know, the World Bank estimates by 2035, we will have an increased demand for critical minerals. So this is really important for us, and there's going to continue to be a pressure globally and for us in the United States in that sector. Yeah. So those questions around community engagement, formalization, and having response mechanisms for due diligence and traceability continue to be very important.
So that brings me to a question about data, mm-hmm. because that's a big piece of this too,
yes.
right? So how is PACT using data, collecting data?
Yeah.
What is the role of data?
Data is really critical and very hard to get and secure. And we are fortunate that we have a program with the World Bank. It's called Delve. We've developed it together with them, whereby we're tracking what's happening in the artisanal and small-scale mining sector. And this is shared across, it's shared globally, but it allows communities and the mining sector to understand the economic contribution of ASM to overall development. It allows policymakers to have an appreciation of what is the contribution to overall development and how it fits in to policy making. And it allows us to have a baseline to measure progress on a sustainable development goals. So this is important. And the theme of the edition that we're working on now is ASM and gender.
Okay.
So that's going to be really critical. So data is critical in this Delve program mm-hmm. that we have with the World Bank at PACT.
That's great. And I mean, that I had a couple conversations recently, and somebody was talking about how some of the private sector companies are trying to figure out alternatives to cobalt so that they don't have to work in DRC, right?
Yes.
Because it is so challenging.
Yes.
But that is also not going to be great for DRC, right?
No.
The communities on the ground are really relying
yes.
on the sector for their livelihoods.
Yes.
And so it's not an either or, right? It's a sort of have to figure out how to make this work better so
yeah.
that the communities are thriving and the rest of the companies are getting the access to the minerals that the rest of the world
yeah.
needs.
And I mean, you know, right now the DRC accounts for 80-90% of the world's supply
yeah.
of cobalt.
Yeah.
So to be able to shift away from that wherever you are situated is not going to be easy. It will be a big displacement for those local communities. But as we look at any legislation around this or initiatives around this, it also demonstrates the degree to which we're all interconnected.
Yeah.
So from a security perspective, we can try to develop access to these resources, you know, whether it's in Bolivia, in lithium, or in the United States with any
yeah.
cobalt mines that we might be looking to put in place again. But ultimately, we're not going to be able to move away from these critical geographies.
Right.
So having in place systems for better tracking, traceability, due diligence, tracking on conflict minerals,
mm-hmm.
and ensuring that any mining that is taking place is not going towards terrorist activities.
Right.
All of that is important, and it's part of our global engagement. That I know you at the Wilson Center and we at PACT as international development practitioners appreciate and work towards.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is not a new issue, but I think, you know, the recent the Inflation Reduction Act and other recent climate-focused legislation has really brought to the fore how critical these minerals are to the renewable energy transition. And like you mentioned, I think the World Bank estimated it's like a 500% demand increase for these minerals by 2050. I don't know if I got that year right, but there, you know, so how do we do this quickly, safely, sustainably, and in ways that benefit all, right? It's a huge question. So thinking about that and this increase in demand and the fact that you have over a decade of experience in this, how, you know, what's next for PACT in this space?
I think we're tracking the demand and understanding how we can continue to engage with our corporate partners. That is critical. Our point of entry, our point of departure, and our guiding principle is always engaging with communities, putting the communities and their well-being first. It means that we have to continue to use that to have our systems in place for due diligence and traceability. That will continue. We will continue to do our work focused on the sustainable development goals around livelihoods, environmental protections, climate change impacts, a decent workforce, looking at how we pay attention to gender in the space, and looking at emerging markets and health connections, for example, the work that we're doing on mercury. So ensuring that we have systems in place to keep a track on what's happening locally while finding new partners and expanding the space as this market continues to be even more critical today and in the future.
That's fantastic. It's been so good to see you, Roger Mark.
Always fun to chat.
We miss you here at the Wilson Center, but I'm grateful for the work that you're doing at PACT, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Very much so. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the new security broadcast from the Wilson Center. Thanks for tuning in. For more information, follow us on Twitter @NewSecurityBeat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.